Or she wanted to hear the answer. He shook his head. The elves guard the Elcries day and night. Arbalon has defenses to keep anything from getting close. We have to hope. That's enough. There's only so much we can do. He put his hand over hers. Now listen to me. I don't know what will happen once Grianne and Penn reappear in the Four Lands. We are all at risk. But whatever happens, you and Penn have only one concern. You have to find that demon. Escape back through the secret passageway and get outside Paranor's walls. Then, go after it. Take Swift Shore, use the elf stones to track it down, and then send it back into the Forbidding. He paused. Penn doesn't know about any of this. You might have to be the one to tell him if Rue and I can't. If so, make sure he understands what he is supposed to do. He can't worry about us or about what happens here. You know the way out. You have to make certain he uses it. She stared at him doubtfully. He won't want to leave you. I don't know if he will listen to me. Beck took her hands and held them. He will listen to reason. You will find the words. He wished he had something more to offer, but what he had just given her was the best he had. Chapter 26. On the wide, night-shadowed plains of the Pashanon, Grianne Ormsford stared in shock as the approaching figure came into the light, and its features were revealed. It was a boy. At first, she thought she must be mistaken, even though she had been told the boy would come for her, even though she had been looking for him all this time. It was the unexpectedness of his appearance that gave her pause. The way he simply materialized out of the receding night, the ease with which he had found her in the middle of nowhere. But it was more than that. She had just left a killing field, a slaughterhouse of the Forbidding's creatures turned to stone. She thought the figure must be something come out of that madness. She thought she was seeing a ghost. Shades, she whispered, and stopped walking altogether. At her side, Wekedart growled,
"What is it, Straken? Who is this creature?"
The boy approached as if there were no hurry, as if he had all the time in the world. He looked haggard and beaten down. He looked to her, she thought suddenly, as she must look to him. His clothing was ragged and his face dirty and careworn. He walked in a way that suggested his journey had been long and hard, and indeed, if he had come from her world, from the world of the Four Lands, it must have been. Though he was clearly young, everything about him was dark and weathered. Except for the odd staff he carried, which was made of a wood that was polished and smooth and glowed red with bits of fire. He walked right up to her and stopped.
"Hello, Aunt Grianne."
It was Pendaren. Of all the boys she might have imagined, he was the last. She couldn't say why, but he was. Maybe it was because he was Beck's son, and it would never have occurred to her that Penn would come for her rather than Beck. Maybe it was just her certainty that if a boy was indeed coming, he would be extraordinary. And Penn was not. He was just an average boy. He lacked his father's magic. He lacked his mother's experience. She had met him only a couple of times, and while he was good-hearted and interested in her, he had never seemed special. Yet there he was, come to her from a place no one else could have come. There, when no one else was.
"Pendaren?" she whispered.
She stepped forward, placed her hands on his shoulders, and looked into his eyes to make sure. Then she hugged him to her, holding on to him with a mix of disbelief and gratitude.
He was the one.
Just the fact of his being there was confirmation of what the shade of the warlock lord had foretold. She felt his arms come around her as well, and he hugged her back. In that instant, they were bonded in a way that could only have happened under the circumstances of that improbable meeting. Whatever befell her, she would never feel the same way about him again. She released him and stepped back.
How did you find me? How did you get here?
He smiled faintly. It might take a while to explain that. He held up the glowing staff.
This is what brought me and what will take us both back, once we return to the place I came in at. The runes carved in its surface glow brighter when it gets nearer to you. I just followed their lead.
She shook her head in disbelief.
I had no idea it could be you. I was told that a boy would come for me, but I never thought it would be Beck's son.
She gave him another hug. There were tears in her eyes, and she wiped them away quickly.
I am so grateful to you.
Wekedart was standing off to one side, a mix of emotions mirrored in his feral features, suspicion fighting with curiosity and hope. She glanced at him, and then turned Pen about to face him.
This is Wekedart, Pen.
He is an Ulkbog, a creature of the forbidding. He calls this the world of the Jaakaar Roos, the Banished Ones. What you should know is that he is my friend. He, alone, of all the creatures I have encountered, has tried to help me. Without him, I would be... She trailed off. I don't know where I would be, she finished quietly. Wekedart beamed.
I am honored to have served the Straken Queen, he announced and bowed deeply.
He looked up again quickly.
If you are her savior, then perhaps you will be mine as well. I wish to continue to protect Grianne of the kind heart and powerful magic. I have pledged myself to do so for as long as she needs me. Can you help me? Are you a Straken too?
No, Grianne said quickly. Pen is family. He is not a Straken, Wekedart. He comes only to take me home again.
And take me too?
The Ulkbog pressed. What do you mean? Pen asked, and then looked at Grianne. What is he talking about?
Leave it alone for now. I have to know more about what you are doing here. I don't understand why you've come instead of your father. Is he all right? He hasn't been harmed, has he?
She listened then as he told her everything that had happened since Tagwin had appeared in Patch Run to seek his father's help. He told her of the little company that had come together in Emberon to start the quest for the Tanaquil. She learned of the death of Aaron Elessadil, and of the dark creatures that had been enlisted by Shadea to hunt Pen down. He told her of the fate of the Skatelow, and the rovers who crewed her, and of star-crossed Cinnaminson's transformation into one of the Aeriads. He told her of brave Kermadec and his rock trolls. He told her of the Tanaquil, of its dual nature, and of the shaping of the Dark Wand. By listening, she came to understand how desperate the struggle had been to reach her, and how much had been sacrificed so that Pen could find a way to bring her back into the Four Lands.
I would have thought my father a better choice for this, too, he finished. But the King of the Silver River said that I was the one who was needed. I guess it was because my magic allowed me to communicate with the Tanaquil. Perhaps my father's couldn't do that. I don't know. I only know that I had to come looking for you, that it was important that I try, even if I really didn't think I could succeed.
Grianne smiled in spite of herself.
Perhaps the King of the Silver River saw something in you that you didn't see in yourself,
Penderyn Ormsford.
Because here you are, whether you believed it could happen or not.
He smiled back.
I'm glad I found you, Aunt Grianne. Wekedart was dancing around again, looking agitated, his craggy features twisting and knotting.
We should leave this place, he whined anxiously.
He glanced back in the direction of the Asphinx colony and the stone statues.
It is dangerous to remain here.
Grianne nodded. He is right, Pen. We can continue talking while we travel. We must go as quickly as possible to the doorway out of the forbidding. Time slips away. They began retracing Pen's steps, walking west toward the receding darkness, the dim gray brightening of the dawn at their backs. The vast sweep of the Pashanon stretched away before them, its stunted, broken landscape empty of movement. Far distant still to the north, the dragon line lifted in stark relief against the horizon. The sky remained clouded and the air hazy as the daylight brightened only marginally the world of the Jarkarus.
I'm very sorry to hear about Aaron Elessadil, she said to Pen after a time. He was the best of my druids, the one I could always depend upon. It proved to be so here at the end, too. But I will miss him.
In truth, she felt as if her heart would break. Only losing Beck could hurt worse. Aaron had been with her since the formation of the Third Druid Order, the linchpin she had relied upon time and time again. He had committed to her during their return to the Four Lands from Parcasia, and she had come to respect him deeply. She looked off into the distance, took a deep breath, and exhaled wearily.
I am sorry about your father and mother, too, she continued, glancing over at him. It isn't fair that they should have been brought into this. It isn't fair that any of you should have, Tagwin, Kermadec, the Rover Girl, any who tried to help. I won't forget. I will try to make things right again, as much as I can.
It was their choice, Pen said, just as it was mine. We all wanted to help. She shook her head dismissively.
Shadea, she said softly. I should have done what Kermadec told me to do a long time ago. I should have rid myself of her. I should have rid myself of them all, Pison Wentz, Terek Molt, Iridia, even Trant Rowan. I am the most disappointed in him. I never thought he would turn against me, no matter how bad things got. I let my judgment be clouded. A bad thing for an Ard Rhys to do.
She was silent for a moment. How many of my druids stand with Shadea and those others, Pen? She asked.
Do you know?
He shook his head.
Some, I guess. She is Ard Rhys now. The druids all answer to her, but I don't know how loyal they are.
He paused. When I was a prisoner, she was away in Arishag. She has an alliance with the Prime Minister.
Sen Dunsadan, she whispered. Another viper. I would expect him to be involved somehow. Shadea would not act without some sort of outside support, and Sen Dunsadan has always hated me.
With reason, she thought. As the Ill's Witch, she had made his life nightmarish. But he had allied himself with the Morgor and tried to have her killed. So she had reason to hate him, too. Yet, she had forgiven him his maliciousness and thought he had done the same. Clearly, she had shown poor judgment there as well.
Are there any I can count upon within the Order to support me?
Pen shook his head.
I don't know of any. No one came to help me but Kyber.
She dropped the matter, and they walked in silence for a time. It was wrong of her to ask such things of Pen. He had no way of knowing the answers. Since her disappearance, his time had been spent in flight. The machinations of those at Paranor and elsewhere would not have been his concern. His concern would have been in trying to stay alive. Her answers to questions of that kind would have to wait until she was back in the Four Lands. Then it would be up to her to find them quickly. Wekedart was back to skittering about, crisscrossing the land ahead, dashing first this way and then that, chattering to himself, anxious to get where they were going. But she had a feeling about that. Something Pen had said when the Alkbog had mentioned him as being savior not only to her, but also to him
nagged at her. "Wekedart," she called. He came racing over, eyes bright with excitement.
"I am here, Straken Queen."
"No sign of further pursuit?" she asked. "No sign of Tail Riverine or his creatures?" The Ulk Bog grinned wickedly.
"He won't have learned of Hobstall's new employment as a resting post for birds quite yet," he said. "It will take time for word to reach him, too much time for him to do anything about it. We will be well away and out of his reach by then."
"Run on ahead a distance and see if the land is clear that way. I want to turn north soon toward the mountains." He glanced in that direction.
"Nothing lies there. What is the point of wasting my time?"
"Don't argue, little man," she snapped. "Remember your promise to serve and protect." He was gone without another word, a dark spot rapidly disappearing into the haze. She felt bad about snapping at him, but he responded better when she did, and she needed to talk with Pen alone. "A word, Pen," she said to him when Wekedart was safely away. "I made a promise to the Ulk Bog in return for his help in getting free of the Straken Lord's prisons. I'll explain about that later. My promise was that I would do what I could to get him out of the Forbidding and into the Four Lands. He wants to come with us." Pen gave her an anxious look. "I thought that was what he meant, but I don't think we can do it. The Dark Wand will take only you and me out of the Forbidding. It will not allow anyone else to go with us. The King of the Silver River told me so." She had suspected as much. Creatures consigned to the Forbidding by fairy magic could not be set free without a disruption in the wall that separated the two worlds. The Dark Wand was not created for that purpose. It was created for putting things back the way they were meant to be. "I'll have to tell him," she said quietly, already wondering how she was going to do that. "I can't let him think he still has a chance of getting out when I know he doesn't." They walked on, the boy keeping pace with her, his head lowered, his staff serving as a walking stick, its runes glowing softly in the dusky light. Her thoughts stayed with Wekedart. He was so convinced that she could do anything, that her Straken powers were omnipotent. He had already made up his mind that she would be able to break him free of the Forbidding and bring him back into the Four Lands. She had warned him not to expect too much, but after the encounter with the Gromf, he had ceased believing there was anything to worry about. Now she was going to have to disappoint him in the way she had disappointed so many others, by not being able to do enough, by being less able than he needed her to be. She felt shackled by her inability, by her weakness, by her humanity. It was almost better not to have any power than to have a lot. Having a lot always created expectations, and somewhere along the way, those expectations would not be met, because that was the way the world worked. "Do you remember when you asked me once if I had any of my father's magic?" Pen asked her suddenly. She glanced over at him, happy for the distraction. "I remember. I told you I hadn't. But that wasn't entirely true. I hadn't any of the Wish Song's magic. But I had another kind. It was such a small magic that I didn't think it worth mentioning. It allowed me to sense what animals and plants and birds were thinking, or why they were acting as they were. I didn't think it was worth anything. I never even told my parents about it, especially my mother, who was afraid of the Olmsford magic." Grian nodded. "I know. She is right to be afraid." He sighed. "Well, now I think maybe my magic does come from the Wish Song. It changed when I took the limb from the Tanaquil and shaped it into the Dark Wand. It changed when I began to bond with the Dark Wand so that it responded to me. I found I could make it do things by humming and singing, in the way of the Wish Song." "It came late to your father, too," she said. "He was older than you before he discovered he had use of it. Walker let him see by giving him the Sword of Shannara and telling him he would have to use it. That bonding triggered a surfacing, just as with you. I sense it changing still.
I think I am just beginning to understand what's there. There is a history of that in our family. It happened with Jair Olmsford. Do you know the story? His sister had full use of the wish song, the first of the Olmsfords to have it. Jair, the brother, had a magic that gave the appearance of being wish song magic, but was only an illusion. Except that some years after their quest to destroy the Ildatch, he discovered that it had evolved, and he had the same use of it as she had, even though it had started out as something else. She gave him a questioning look. What's bothering you? He ran his fingers through his shock of reddish hair, tangling it further. I just thought that, since it is my connection with the Dark One that allows us to cross through the Forbidding, maybe there is still a chance for Wekedart to come with us. If my magic is still changing, if I don't know what it will do yet, it might turn out that it can help. He looked over at her. So, maybe you should wait to tell him. Until we're sure, I mean. She stared at him for a moment, surprised. I don't know if that's such a good idea, Pen, she said finally. He looked off in the direction the Elk Bog had gone. I just don't think anyone should have to stay here if they don't want to. I know he is a descendant of one of those consigned to the Forbidding, but that was a long time ago. Things can change. He doesn't seem so bad to me. She smiled to herself. She liked the way he wanted to help Wekedart, even without knowing anything about him. It spoke volumes about the kind of boy he was, and it made her feel still closer to him. She was glad he was like that. She hoped she would get a chance later to tell her brother so. He isn't so bad, she said finally. She tried to tell herself that was so, that being imprisoned in the demon world did not necessarily indicate that the Elk Bog was beyond redemption. No one was beyond redemption, after all. Wasn't she proof of that? Then a scream, a mix of shriek and roar, blew past them like a windstorm, and Penn's dragon dropped out of the sky and settled to the ground directly in front of them. High in the towers of Paranor, Trefin Maurice turned another corner on another passageway, Belezen at his heels, and looked for a way out. They had been running ever since they had helped Kermadec escape through the windows of the meeting chamber. Surrounded by gnome hunters, they had been lucky to get away themselves. They'd been able to climb up through the heating vents and crawl down the shaft to another room before the gnomes could discover what they had done. But the hunt had gone on, and their time and space were running out. The gnomes knew they were trapped on the upper levels of the keep and had blocked all the passageways down. All that was left to the young druids were the towers above, and even those were being closed off one by one.
In here!
He hissed at Belezen, pulling her through an open door into a storage room filled with druid cloaks and soft slippers. The sounds of pursuit already drawing near, he shut the door quietly behind them. He slid the locking bolt into place and looked around wearily. It was just another in an endless series of rooms into which they had fled and tried to hide. This one had a connecting door that led to a second room, and after determining there was no other way out of the one they were in, he took Belezen with him into the second and locked its door as well. The room was tiny, a chamber he had never seen before. It had no other door than the one they had come through. A single narrow window was set in the far wall. When he crossed to open it, he found himself peering out at the north wall and the woods beyond. They were 5 stories up, and the wall dropped straight down. He looked at Belezen, who stood waiting for his assessment. They might not think to look here. But they already had. He could hear them at the door of the first chamber trying to break through. Eventually, they would. Then they would break through the second door. He scanned the room from wall to wall, from floor to ceiling, and then looked out through the window again to see if he had missed anything. But there was no help to be found anywhere. They were trapped. Belizen read it in his eyes and nodded. He walked back to her.
I won't let them take me, he said. I know what will happen if they do.
She nodded, her pale, round face calm, her gaze clear and steady.
I won't let them take me, either.
But they will take us, he said. There's too many of them. We'll be overwhelmed.
She gave him a small smile. Not if we don't wait around for that to happen.
She reached for his hands and led him over to the window. She looked out into the afternoon and then stepped up onto the windowsill.
Come up with me, Treffen.
He did so, deliberately keeping his eyes on her face, refusing to look down. He stood with her in the opening, holding her hands, feeling the cool wind blow over him in a soothing wash. In the room beyond, the door began to splinter and break.
It's only a short jump, she said. It won't take long. I wish we could be here when our mistress returns, he said. I would like her to know how much she means to us. Someone will tell her, she replied.
She glanced back at the door to their room.
Are you ready?
I think so, he said. He took a deep breath. They waited quietly, listening to the sounds without, to the breaking down of the door in the far chamber, and then to the thudding of the booted feet as the gnomes rushed to the door that led into their room. It helps that you are with me, he said softly. Belizen gave him a small smile. Then a horn sounded, its wail deep and ominous, reverberating off the walls and through the rooms of the keep. Shouts rose from below, and abruptly, Paranor came alive in a new and terrible way. Outside their door, the gnomes turned and ran, abandoning their efforts. Treffen, Maurice, and Belizen stared at each other in disbelief, and then they looked out the window where the sounds of activity were loudest. Thousands of rock trolls were striding out of the trees, armored giants forming up battle lines at the gates to the fortress of the Druids.
Chapter 27 Grianne Ormsford took a quick step back as the dragon settled into place on the flats, its wings folding against its huge, scaly body. Steam rose off its back in clouds, and she could feel the heat of it from 50 feet away. The dragon flexed and undulated from head to tail, the spikes that ridged its back shivering like great stalks of grass blown in a wind. It coughed once, and then exhaled a huge gout of fire and smoke. An eerie silence settled over the landscape, and it felt to her in that instant as if everything living had disappeared from the earth, save the dragon, the boy, and herself. Then the head swung toward her, and the maw parted to reveal rows of blackened teeth. The stench of its breath sent her backwards another few steps, its yellow eyes narrowed and fixed on her. Except that they weren't fixed on her, she realized suddenly. They were fixed on Pen, who was standing next to her.
It's the Dark Wand, he said quietly. It's fascinated by the glowing runes.
He was right. The dragon had settled down into a comfortable crouch and was staring intently at the staff. The runes carved into its surface were pulsating with hypnotic consistency in the gray mistiness of the afternoon.
It's been following me ever since I arrived, Pen said. She blinked at him. You've encountered it before? Twice.
He looked chagrined.
The first time was after I had walked into the passes leading down from the heights where I came into the forbidding. I fell asleep, and it was there when I awoke, staring at me, or at the staff. I couldn't get rid of it at first, but finally I did. I thought I was done with it, but yesterday it reappeared here on the flats while I was trying to reach you. It came to my rescue, actually.
Your rescue?
She couldn't hide her disbelief. I was trying to find somewhere to spend the night when I wandered into a nest of harpies. They wouldn't let me out again. They were going to eat me. But the dragon reappeared and ate them instead.
He saw the look on her face and shook his head.
It doesn't have any interest in me. It doesn't care about me one way or the other.
It's the runes.
He glanced over at the dragon, which was watching them contentedly.
Something about watching the glow of the runes makes it happy. Or fascinates it. I don't know, Aunt Grianne. I just know that I can't get rid of it.
Well, you managed to do so twice now, she pointed out.
It was the wish song magic, he said. It surfaced after my bonding with the dark wand, but it was the dragon's appearance that gave me a reason to test it. I didn't know if the magic would work, but I was desperate, so I tried it out. I used it to send images of the runes off into the distance, like a lure. The dragon went after them, and I escaped.
He paused for a moment, frowning. The second time it was too busy eating the harpies to pay much attention to me. I just slipped away.
But I guess it came looking for me.
I guess it did.
She looked at the monster, at its huge bulk and great hooked claws and muscular body. She stared into its yellowed eyes and found them glazed and unfocused. A dragon mesmerized by bits of light. She would never have believed it.
Can you get rid of it now?
I don't know. I can try.
He began to hum softly, connecting with the wish song, and as he did so, the runes of the dark wand danced in response, growing brighter and more active as the music increased. Soon, their glow was racing across the length of the staff in ever-changing and increasingly complex patterns. She glanced at the dragon.
It was staring at the staff. Satisfaction and delight mirrored in its lidded eyes. It was sitting up straight, head bent forward, as still as if it had been carved from stone.
Then the runes began to cast their images into the air, a kaleidoscope of fire bits whirling this way and that. The images spun and wove together, leaving tiny trails of light in the wake of their passing. The dragon's jaws widened, and its breath came in grunts and snorts. Claws dug into the earth, and its tail coiled and uncoiled rhythmically. The images danced toward it, closing on it like tiny fireflies, then leapt away into the sky, speeding off into the horizon, a long line of them beckoning with their comet light. But the dragon didn't move. It sat watching them intently for a moment, then turned back to Pen and the staff once more. Pen kept at it a few moments longer, then gave up.
"It's not working," he said, breaking off with a tired gasp.
"I don't understand. Before, it would have flown after the images. Now it's only watching them."
Grianne studied the dragon a moment. "It's learned that flying after the images doesn't do it any good. The images don't last. It's figured out that the source is the staff, and that staying close to the staff is the best way to keep the images coming."
She shook her head.
"It's a brute. But it isn't stupid."
They stared at the dragon in silence. The dragon stared back. In Pen's hand, the dark wand continued to glow and its runes to dance and pulse.
"What are we going to do?"
Pen asked finally. Grianne didn't know. She could use the wish song's magic,
but she was afraid of the reaction she would trigger. If she didn't kill the dragon, it would be on them in a heartbeat. Even if she did kill it, using so much magic would draw the Straken Lord to them like a beacon of firelight in darkest night. Either result would be horrendous. She was beginning to think she wasn't going to be given a choice in the matter, when a strange, barking cough sounded from somewhere in the distance, off toward the dragon line. It was rough, and made her think of scraping metal and of old saws cutting green wood. She flinched in spite of herself. But the dragon sat up immediately, head swinging away from the dark wand and its glowing runes, eyes peering out toward the sound. Several minutes passed, and no one moved. Then the sound came again, farther away this time, and more to the east. The dragon's head swung toward it, lifting alertly. It huffed, and steam poured out of its nostrils. When the sound came a third time, the dragon roared with such ferocity that Grianne and Penn dropped to their knees in shock. Seconds later, the monster was airborne, winging away in the direction of the sound, flying off without a backwards glance. "What happened?" Penn breathed in confusion. Grianne shook her head. "I don't know, but let's not stand around talking about it," she glanced over. "Can you do something to quiet those runes? Can you stop them from glowing? If it comes back, I don't want the staff to help it find us." "I'll try," he said. He slipped off his cloak and wrapped it carefully about the dark wand so that the glow of the runes was hidden. "There," he said, satisfied. They began walking again, heading toward the mountains, changing direction just enough that they were moving more north than west. More than once, Grianne peered off into the distance in the direction the dragon had taken, but there was no sign of it. No more than a mile ahead were hills that would offer them better cover. If they hurried, they would reach the hills before the dragon decided to come looking for them. She wondered how far it was to where they could try to get back through the forbidding. She glanced skyward. Night was approaching. "Penn, why do the runes continue to glow even when you're not using the wish song?" He shrugged. "They just do. They were glowing that first morning when I woke and the dragon was sitting there. They respond to me in a way that doesn't involve me telling them what to do. I'm not even sure how much control I have over them. Not much, I think." Odd, she thought. The magic of the wish song did not have a history of independent response. It came only when summoned, and did only what it was asked to do. Its behavior here must have something to do with Penn's bonding with the dark wand, with the melding of two magics. In some way, the wish song had developed the ability to activate itself, to respond to the boy's needs, even when the boy wasn't aware of exactly what they were. Her magic, she thought, though far more powerful than his, had never been able to do that. They had walked until they were almost into the hills when Weka Dart reappeared, arms flailing excitedly as he sprang out from behind a stand of heavy brush.
"Did you see? Did you see?"
He jumped up and down and cackled as if gone mad.
"It was completely fooled. I told you I would protect you, Straken Queen. I could see what would happen if I did not act, and so I used my brain and tricked it."
She realized he was talking about the dragon. "What did you do, Weka Dart? What was that sound?" He shrieked with laughter.
"A mating call. What better way to get its attention than to give it something more important to think about than the two of you?"
"You know how to give a dragon mating call?"
"I was catcher for Tail Riverine a long time. I learned how to give many kinds of calls. I would have been a poor catcher otherwise, and I was the best that ever was. Did you like it? You had no idea what it was, did you? Did it make you wonder if maybe something was dying? That's how dragons sound when they're in love!"
He danced about wildly, and then started away.
Hurry! Come! Come! We have to reach the dragon line by nightfall. We need to keep moving.
He wheeled back a moment.
It was good that I was close by and watching out for you, wasn't it? I saved you both.
Then he was off again, racing into the distance, a small, crook-limbed blur against the haze. Grianne stared after him and thought in despair. There must be a way. When the battle horn sounded, Kermadec was crouched in the shadow of a half-wall atop the gatehouse where Atlan and the other rock trolls were hiding. He hesitated only long enough to make certain he was not mistaken about what was happening, then leaped from his place of concealment to the floor below and raced for the gatehouse door. After leaving Treffen, Maurice, and Bellizen, the trolls had made it down from the parapets and found their way to the base of the north wall and the gate that Grianne had always kept open for meetings. But the gate was closed and sealed, and Kermadec could tell at a glance that it would take too much effort and make entirely too much noise to force it. Someone had taken a good deal of time and trouble to make certain that it would not be used again. More than likely, it had been discovered by Shadea and her allies after they had dispatched the Ard Ris into the Forbidding and assumed control of the keep. Shadea would have been quick to recognize its significance. So for the better part of 2 hours, the trolls had hidden in the gatehouse next to it, a less than satisfactory location given what they were now faced with doing, but one that was unlikely to be visited any time soon. But, with the gate of choice stoutly sealed, Kermadec and his trolls would have to breach another gate. Since the next closest gate was some distance from where they hid, there was every possibility that they would be spotted long before they reached it. There was nothing they could do about that. The only way the trolls were going to take Paranor was by breaching the druid defenses from the inside. That meant seizing and holding a gate long enough for the trolls outside the walls to get inside. Kermadec burst through the gatehouse door. All around him, the fortress of the druids was erupting in a frenzy of wild shouts and charging men. "They've arrived!" he informed the other trolls, putting his back to the door and facing them across the tiny, shadow-streaked room. Atalan's face was a mask of excitement.
"Now we'll see how strong these walls really are," he hissed. "Let's go!" "Not yet!"
his brother blocked his way.
"Give it a moment more. Let them get to the walls and settle in place. Let them all be looking at what threatens from without, so they won't be looking at us. Then we'll take them."
Atalan came right up against him.
"Why wait, brother? Confusion serves us better than it serves them. Delay is for cowards and weaklings. We should take them now."
Kermadec held his ground, his gaze steady.
"You are too impatient, Atalan. You rush to do everything too quickly."
Atalan spit.
"If I am too impatient, you are too cautious. You delay everything too long. Move more quickly and we might have better success. Are we here to help the Ard Ris or not?" "Don't push too hard on me," Kermadec said softly. "And do not question my commitment to the Ard Ris. It is not your place to do so."
"Shh!" Beric hissed at them. He was standing at the shuttered window, keeping watch as dozens of gnome hunters charged past on their way to the parapets. "You'll be hurt if you keep this up." The brothers faced each other a moment longer. Then Atalan turned away with a shrug.
"You are Matarin, Kermadec. You are leader. The responsibility for what happens here is yours. Who am I to question you?"
He slouched back to the far wall and slumped down, staring at nothing, seething with anger and embarrassment. Kermadec turned back to the door and ignored him. It was dark by the time Grianne and Penn began the climb into the dragon line. Shadows thrown by the skeletal trees and distant peaks draped the land. West, the light was fading from gray to black, and the twilight hush that marked the transition from day to night was retiring the creatures of one and bringing out the creatures of the other.
Sounds faded as if swallowed beneath the surface of an endless sea, and the world became a place for the quick and the dead. Grianne's eyes roamed the landscape on a ceaseless scour, alert for things that might be hunting them. The boy walked quietly beside her. They had not seen Weka Dart since he had departed, but she felt certain he was close, watching their progress, ready to save them once more should the need arise. Or save himself, perhaps. She knew enough of the Elk Bog to appreciate that whatever his good intentions, he would always look after himself first. Still, it seemed petty of her to think of him that way after he had lured off the dragon. She wished she could form a better opinion of the Elk Bog, but she was too familiar with how he managed to get through life to do so. It seemed only moments later that Weka Dart appeared out of the black, materializing so suddenly that she almost struck out at him.
"Straken!"
he hissed at her in a clear tone of reprimand.
"You cannot continue in the dark. Too many things hunt at night, and even I cannot see them all. We must stop and wait for morning."
She was anxious to reach their destination and get out of the forbidding for good, but the urgency in his voice gave her pause. "Is it really so dangerous? We are almost there."
"You are not as close as you think. This is a different pass than the one you took down. Best not to repeat your steps when Tail Riverine is looking for you. No, Grianne of the powerful magic, you must stop now. You and the boy, rest here. Wait for dawn."
So they did, taking shelter in a cluster of boulders that gave them protection on three sides and provided an overhang as well. They would take turns keeping watch, they agreed. When first light appeared, they would set out again. The remainder of the journey would take only a couple of hours. Then, Grianne told herself once again, she would be free. "Weka Dart," she said after they had settled into the rocks. She could barely see him in the hazy darkness, a dim shadow hunched down to one side. Only his eyes gleamed, watchful and steady.
"I have something to tell you."
She heard Penn exhale in anticipation of what was coming. She ran her fingers through her hair, pushing it back from her face, wondering how to put what she must say into words, and then deciding she should just say it. "Penderin tells me that the Dark Wand will not take you out of the forbidding. It will only take him and me. No one else." Weka Dart snorted.
"He is mistaken. Or if not mistaken, he underestimates the power of your magic. You can find a way to take me, even if the staff does not wish it."
She sighed. "I don't think so. This is old magic, older than I am and more powerful. The wall of the forbidding cannot be broken by ordinary means. That is why it was so difficult for Tail Riverine to get his demon into the four lands. He had to work a switch to make that happen. You told me so yourself."
"Perhaps you can switch the Morik back again in exchange for me," he said brightly.
His enthusiasm was frustrating.
"No, I can't. I don't know how. I don't even know how this staff works. It responds to Penn, not to me. What matters is that the fairy creature who told Penn about the staff was very explicit. It cannot bring anyone out of the forbidding but us."
Weka Dart was on his feet in an instant, arms pinwheeling.
"But you promised. You said you would take me with you if I got you out of Tail Riverine's prisons. You said you would. Did you lie? Is it true that all Strakens lie, even you?"
She held up her hands. "I told you that I would do what I could to help you, but that I didn't even know if I could help myself. That was what I said. It was the truth, not a lie. If Penn hadn't come with the staff, I couldn't escape the forbidding either. I would be trapped here as well."
"Now you won't be, will you?"
he shrieked. No.
But I will. I will.
Not if we can...
You lied! You lied! You lied!
Spitting at Penderin, as if the situation were his fault, the Ulk Bog rushed out of the shelter, screaming invectives at both of them, and then disappeared into the night. But he was back again within minutes, trudging out of the inky black and flinging himself down where he had been sitting before. For a long time, he didn't say anything. Grianne waited.
"Who will protect you from dragons, Grianne of the Broken Promises?"
he whispered finally. He said it with such sadness that it made her throat tighten in response.
"There are no dragons in my world," she answered.
"No dragons?"
His head lifted from the cradle of his arms.
"Well, who will protect you from the Furies, then? Or the giants, and ogres, and gromps? Who will warn you of their coming? Who will keep you from stumbling into their lairs?"
"There are no Furies, ogres, giants, or gromps. All of those are here. They were all sent here in the time of Faerie, when the Forbidding was created." She paused. "My world is nothing like yours, little Ulk Bog. It is a very different kind of place."
"Are there Ulk Bogs like me?"
"No. There are no fairy kind at all, save elves."
"I hate elves,"
he muttered.
"Elves enslave the Jarkaroos."
"Wekedart," she said quietly, "we will try to take you with us, just as I promised. I will keep my word. I just want you to know that I may not be able to break you free. I may not have the power to do that." He was silent a long time.
"No Ulk Bogs?"
"No."
He squirmed around in the dark, shifting positions, trying first one, then another, so restless that she thought there was something wrong with him. "Are you all right?"
"I might not come with you after all,"
he said suddenly.
"I might stay here. Your world sounds boring. It sounds as if there is nothing to do. I might be better off staying right where I am."
She stared at him.
"I thought you said you couldn't do that. I thought you said Tail Riverine would kill you if you stayed."
"He might take me back, now that Hobstall is dead."
Wekedart's voice was small and contemplative.
"He will need a new catcher."
"No," she said at once. "The Straken Lord will have you killed, Wekedart. He will find out what you have done, and that will be the end of you."
"He might not. He might think me too valuable now."
She wanted to shake him so hard his teeth rattled. "If this is a threat meant to get back at me for telling you the truth, for telling you what I thought you had a right to know, then it is a poor one. Don't be such a fool. You cannot talk about going back to Tail Riverine. Going back is suicide."
"Or maybe I will go west, where I said I wanted to go when we met."
He shrugged.
"Maybe I will go to Hookah Flats and find a place where I will be accepted."
She didn't know what to say. She wanted him to quit talking the way he was. She wanted to tell him they would find a way to get him out of the Forbidding. She wanted him to wait until they knew for sure what was going to happen when they used the Dark Wand. But Wekedart was already sifting his expectations in his mind, rethinking his life and his plans for the future, accepting, better than she perhaps, the realities. "Don't decide anything tonight," she said to him. "Wait until we have a chance to test the staff. Will you do that?" He was silent for a long time.
"I will sleep on it, Straken Queen. I will give it the thought it deserves."
"I wouldn't ask for more than that," she said.
"I would be a good catcher for you. Is there anything to catch over there or to protect you from? There must be something."
"There are enemies,"
she assured him. There are always enemies. She watched him lie down and curl into a ball.
I will keep you safe from your enemies,
he said softly.
I will protect you.
I know.
She sat staring out into the night, her thoughts dark and threatening, pushing back her weariness. She should be able to do more for him than what she believed she could. She should be able to help him, but she didn't know where to start. She didn't know how to do what was needed. She felt weak and impotent.
I will be there for you,
he whispered. Then he said nothing more. She awoke with the dawn, the silvery tinge of its breaking, a faint blush on the eastern horizon. The sky was overcast, and the clouds thick and roiling across the Passchanon. A storm was building to the southwest, and there was a screen of rain where it swept eastward out of Hookah Flats. She looked around. Penn was sound asleep at her side, the dark wand cradled in his arms. Wekka Dart was nowhere to be found. She took a moment to scan the countryside, but didn't see him. Apparently, he had left early to scout the pass. She roused Penn, and after eating the remainder of the roots Wekka Dart had provided for their evening meal, they set off. She felt an urgency about doing so, a need to reach their destination quickly. She was aware of how fragile she was. Still unhealed from her experiences at the hands of Tail Riverine, her strength came mostly from the knowledge that she was close to being free of him for good. If she could escape the forbidding as well, she might recover herself. If she could put enough distance between herself and what had been done to her, she might be able to shore up her uncertain psyche. The memories would never leave her, but perhaps she could take the edge off them. She was holding herself together mostly through cobbled-together bits and pieces of determination, stubbornness, and pride. She was still Ard Rhys, but to become anything like whole again, she must regain her hold on the position as well as the title. She looked around with haunted eyes. The oppressiveness of the world of the Jarka Rus closed about her. Another day in the forbidding, and she could not say for certain that she would not give way to the madness that had threatened to claim her ever since her arrival. Time was growing increasingly short for her. She could listen to the sound of its passing and the beating of her heart. They climbed steadily into the pass, frequently looking back over their shoulders to the plains, which were disappearing in the sweep of the storm. But there appeared to be no pursuit and no indication of anything dangerous coming their way. And there was still no sign of Wekka Dart. It was nearing midday when they gained the forested heights of the Dragon Line and began to head west, toward the place where they had entered the Forbidding. The day had gone very dark as the storm clouds continued to roll eastward. The wind had picked up, and the first sprinkles of rain blew into their faces. Not wanting to be caught in the storm, they pressed on. Grianne chose their path, her sense of where she was stronger now. The boy walked silently beside her, the staff covered and out of sight. In the distance, thunder rumbled in long, rolling peals, and lightning flashed on the plains. Then, quite unexpectedly, they emerged from the trees into a clearing, and Grianne recognized it as the place they had been searching for. She took Penn's arm and nodded to him without speaking. The boy grinned a disarming response that made her smile as well. It was almost over. She looked around for Wekka Dart, but still he wasn't there. Penn saw the look on her face. Where is he, Aunt Grianne? I thought he would be waiting for us. She took a long moment to study the trees, to peer through the gloom not only of the day, but also of her own realization of what had happened. He isn't coming, she said. The boy stared at her. Why wouldn't he come? Doesn't he want to get out of here? She shook her head. I don't know. I'm not sure he knows. I think he's afraid. Of failing to get out if the Dark Wand won't take him. Of getting out and finding it isn't what he expects. Maybe something else altogether.
Penderyn looked away.
I wouldn't stay here if I were him. I would take the chance that there might be something better.
She took a deep breath. She could use her magic to try to find the Alkbog. He might be close still, waiting to see if they would look for him. He might be testing her.
But she knew in her heart that he wasn't, that he was far away, that he had put her behind him. She would be someone he had known and helped, someone he could brag about, but she would be only a memory.
Would he try to go back to Tail Riverine and become his catcher once more? Would he take the chance that the Straken Lord either did not know of his participation in her escape, or would forgive him for it? With the Alkbog, it was impossible to tell.
Weka Dart.
She spoke his name in her mind, conjuring up images of him that she thought she would carry with her to the grave.
We have to go, she told Pen abruptly. We can't wait on him. Use the staff.
The boy brought out the Dark Wand and set it butt downward against the earth, his hands wrapped around its carved surface. The runes were glowing softly, pulsing bright red in the darkness of the midday storm.
Place your hands with mine, he said.
She started to do so, then stopped.
Pen, listen to me. They will be waiting for us when we come through, Shadea Aru and those who have allied themselves with her. They will have figured out where you went and be prepared for the possibility that you might get back again and bring me with you. They will know where to look for us. They will attack the moment they see us. They will try to put an end to both of us. So I want you to be ready. I want you to get behind me and stay there until you have a chance to get clear, any chance. As soon as you see one, you are to take it. Don't wait for me. Don't even think about me. Just run and keep running. Do you understand?
He nodded, but looked uncertain. She put her hands on his shoulders.
You showed great courage in coming here to save me. I don't know anyone else who could have done what you did, except perhaps your father. I owe it to him to do for you what you have done for me. I want you safe and sound when this business is finished, Penderyn. Tell me you will do as I have asked.
He nodded again, more firmly this time.
I will, Aunt Grianne.
She took her hands from his shoulders.
Are you ready?
He took a deep breath.
I am. Then, let's go home.
She wrapped her hands on the staff and held tight. Chapter 28. The transition happened quickly. The runes began to glow more intensely, gaining strength from her touch.
Grianne blinked against the sudden brightness, and then felt a kind of shifting in the space she occupied.
The grayness of the forbidding grew slowly darker, as if the storm had caught up to them and they were about to be engulfed. All that took place in seconds, barely giving her enough time to register what was transpiring. She glanced over at Pen, who held on to the Dark Wand from the other side, his eyes closed.
But she did not close hers. She wanted to see what was going to happen to her.
Even so, she did not. The runes suddenly burst into fiery brightness, and it appeared as if the staff itself was aflame. It was all she could do to keep holding on to it, to persuade herself that the fire was an illusion. The glow grew steadily, cocooning her away, shutting off her surroundings from the world of the Jarkarus, from everything but the staff and herself and Pen. Then everything was gone, and she was fighting for air as a massive fist closed about her body,
crushing her, squeezing the air from her lungs with relentless pressure. She fought back against it, struggling to breathe, to stay alive. "Something has gone wrong," she thought in desperation. "Something isn't right." Then the light dimmed, the runes darkened, and she was standing once more in the familiar surroundings of her sleeping chamber, returned safe and whole to Paranor. She still had a death grip on the staff, but the runes had gone dark. She exhaled sharply in relief. In the next instant, the Triagonel collapsed about her. She knew what it was immediately. She had caught a glimpse of the magic's glow in the few seconds it took for her passage out of the forbidding to become complete, but she had failed to recognize its significance until it was too late. The glow disappeared as the Triagonel dropped into place, becoming an invisible presence that hemmed her in on all sides, an unbreakable cage. "Don't move, Pendaren," she said to him. He stood across from her, still smiling happily at having escaped the forbidding. The smile faded slowly, and he looked around in surprise. "We're caught in a Triagonel," she informed him. A quick sweep of her hand illuminated the strands of their prison. "I told you they would be waiting, but I didn't foresee this."
"What is it?"
"A very powerful form of magic. It takes 3 magic users to create it, a combination of their skills to bring it to life." But the glow was not uniform, she saw. In some places, it was very nearly dark. In a properly constructed Triagonel, the magic should be equally distributed.
"There's something wrong here," she murmured. "See?"
She pointed at a couple of the weaker spots, at the obvious darknesses, and as she did so, the door to the concealed passageway on the far side of the chamber swung inward, and her brother's face appeared in the opening.
"Grianne!"
"Beck!" she exclaimed in shock. "How in the world—"
"Listen to me," he interrupted, cutting her short. "I've used the wish song to weaken several of the Triagonel strands. I think you can break free if you try."
"Close the door," she said. He did so, and she pushed Penn down on the floor and stood over him. "Cover your head. Don't look up until I tell you." She would not have much time. Shadea and the others would be coming. Perhaps they were already just outside. She would have to hurry. She was afraid of the wish song after what had happened inside of the forbidding, but she had no other choice. She was going to have to use it anyway when she faced Shadea. So she summoned the magic boldly, and when it surfaced, she formed it into razor-sharp edges that would cut and sever and then sent them screaming into the weakened places in the net. The wish song spun and ripped through the netting, overcoming momentary resistance from the enabling magic and slicing through strands until the cage sagged like soft rope. She kept at it, working at first one place and then another, and when she had the entire structure sufficiently weakened, she attacked it with such force that the Triagonel disintegrated and she blew out the entire north wall of the sleeping chamber. Stone blocks and debris exploded outward, and a huge cloud of dust mushroomed through the room. Grianne covered her face, waited for the dust to settle, and then pulled Penn back to his feet.
"Beck!"
she shouted. Her brother burst into the room with Rue Meridian, Tagwin, and an elven girl she took to be Kyber Elesidil right behind. There was a quick exchange of grateful hugs between Penn and his parents and Kyber. Only Beck hugged her. Grianne saw dismay and shock reflected in their faces when they looked at her. She could even see pity.
"I'm all right," she said to them.
Her brother shook his head. "You're not all right. Shadea Aru and all those others who betrayed you will pay for this. We will hunt them down. We will find out everything. But we have something else we have to talk about now, something that won't wait. A demon was set free when you were taken. It's still here, and it's trying to break down the forbidding."
"I know of this," she said.
"I thought as much. What you don't know is that the only way to stop it is for Penn to find it and use the Dark Wand to return it, just as he used the staff to return you." Pandaren has to do this? She asked in surprise.
The King of the Silver River said he must. Only the Dark One can complete the transfer from one world to the other, and only Pen can command the magic. I have to take him with us to find the demon.
In the hallway outside the sleeping chamber door, there was new activity, the sound of running and of shouts.
They're coming, she said to the others.
She brought up her hands, summoned her magic once more, and sealed the door from the inside.
That will hold them for a few minutes, no more. She turned back to Beck. Take the others and go. You found your way here through the secret passageways. Can you find your way back again?
He nodded.
Between us, Tagwin and I can manage.
I'm not coming,
the dwarf declared almost belligerently.
I belong here with the Ard-Reese.
Grianne moved over to him quickly and knelt. Yes, you do, but you must leave anyway. All of you must. There's nothing you can do for me by staying. I have to face Shadea and the others alone. I am the one who can deal with them best. Only Beck might be able to help, but his place is with Pen, finding that demon and dispatching it. Listen to me. She gripped the dwarf's shoulders tightly. I've seen the inside of the forbidding Tagwin. It is a horror beyond anything you can imagine. If the creatures that live there were to be set free in this world, it would be the end of us all. You have to stop that from happening. Whatever becomes of me, you have to stop that.
She held his gaze. Finally, he gave her a small nod, his bearded face twisted into an unhappy knot.
I will do this because you ask it, he said quietly, but not willingly.
She turned at once to Pen. This won't be easy. You won't know what you have to do until you find the demon. Perhaps you will have to find a way to get it to touch the staff. Perhaps it will take more. I wish I could tell you something helpful, but you know as much as I do about how it works. Trust your instincts, Pen. They won't betray you.
The boy nodded.
I don't want to leave you either.
She smiled.
I'll see you again. Just go, do what you must. Do what is needed. She looked around. All of you, go. Now.
They did so, one by one, disappearing through the door into the secret passageway, glancing back at her as they did, a mix of reluctance and dismay mirrored on their faces. Beck was the last to depart.
Don't let anything happen to you, he said.
It's taken too much out of us getting you back to bear the thought of losing you again.
He paused.
I love you, Grianne.
Then he pulled the door shut behind him and was gone, his words still echoing in her mind.
I love you too, she thought.
She turned back to the sleeping chamber and looked at the sealed door. She had come a long way to face what awaited her on the other side. She had fought hard for a chance to put things right. But all of a sudden, she was unsure if she could do so.
How odd, she thought.
On the floor in front of her, the last strands of the ruined Triagonel were slowly dissolving as their magic leached away. She stared for a moment, then caught sight of herself in the mirror and saw what Beck and the others had seen, a ghost, a tattered imitation of herself. She walked to the closet on the other side of the room, opened it, and took out one of the robes hanging there, clean and sleekly black. She draped it around her shoulders and fastened it in place with the clasp she had fashioned in the shape of the Eilt Druin, the druid chain of office, the symbol of their order. Her enemies would see her this last time, she told herself, as she meant for them to see her, as leader, as Ard-Reese. She fingered the clasp, tracing the raised image of a hand holding forth a burning torch. The meaning of the elfish words came back to her. Through knowledge, power. Perhaps this day she would see. Then she crossed the room and swept the air in front of the chamber door with one hand to remove the magic that sealed it. tightening her resolve. She flung open the door. Shadea Aru stood on the battlements of Paranor's north wall with Trant Rowan and looked down at the army of rock trolls amassed before the gates. On hearing of this new threat, she had come at once, determined that she would deal with it herself, that she would not leave it up to her less than reliable allies. But having seen for herself how many trolls were gathered, in excess of 1,000, she was unsure of what to do. "Have they made any sort of demand?" she asked Trant Rowan. He shook his head.
"Not a word out of any of them. They simply walked out of the trees and formed up in ranks and haven't moved or said anything since."
"This must have something to do with Kermadec," she said quietly. "Those trolls bear the banner of Tau Po Ruff. They wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. Are you sure you left him safely behind at Stridegate? After all, that girl managed to find a way onto one of the ships."
"He was on the ground with the others when we lifted off. He was trapped by thousands of Urdas. Even if he got past them, he would have had to walk out. It would have taken days."
Trant Rowan shook his head, and then gestured toward the troll army.
"Maybe they've come looking for him. Maybe they think he's here."
She considered the possibility. "Maybe."
But that suggestion didn't feel right. A few might come, but not an entire army. It was something else, something much more dangerous. She glanced at the lower walls where the gnome hunters were hiding behind the battlements. They could hold against an attack if the trolls did not get past the walls, but there were too few of them to withstand an assault if the attackers broke through. She had already ordered that the gates be reinforced. There was nothing more she could think of to do at that point. She would let the trolls stand out there all day, if that was what they wanted to do. If they were still standing there the next day, she might consider using her magic to disperse them. But that would require an enormous drain on her reserves, a last resort when all else failed. She would need a good reason to commit herself to such an action. She was considering the possibility of sending word to the Eastland gnomes that they needed reinforcements when Pison Wentz came flying down the stairs from the North Tower, his black robes billowing wildly, his sharp features stricken.
"The Triagonel has collapsed," he shouted to them.
"She's back," Shadea thought instantly.
"You're sure about this?" she snapped, exchanging a quick glance with Trant Rowan. Pison Wentz sneered, trying to hide the fear in his eyes.
"Do you think me a fool? The magic's gone dark. What else could it mean?"
She ignored the taunt, brushing past him as she moved quickly toward the tower stairs, her strong features hard and set.
"Let's finish this," she said softly.
They went up the stairs in a rush. Already, Shadea felt the magic building inside her in anticipation of the battle ahead. She smiled fiercely. This time, there would be no mistakes. They had gained the head of the stairs and were turning down the hallway leading to the sleeping chamber when its north wall blew apart. Deep in the hidden passageways in the walls of the keep, the Ohmsfords, Kyber Elesidil, and a grumbling Tagwin descended toward the furnace room. In a somber mood, the group moved ahead in silence.
"I don't like that we left her back there alone,"
the dwarf repeated over and over again.
"You know we couldn't stay, Tagwin," Rue Meridian said finally. "You know she wouldn't let us."
"There are too many of them for her to have a chance."
Rue shook her head.
"I wouldn't wager against her, whatever the odds."
Tagwin went silent for a time as the little band continued through the darkness, using a small light provided by Kyber's elemental magic as a beacon. They could not tell what was happening behind them. The stone block walls were thick and massive and muffled all sounds from the other side. The chambers of the Druid's keep were tombs, and they kept their secrets well.
"We could still go back,"
Tagwin muttered under his breath.
"It isn't too late."
Beck wheeled back on him furiously.
"Stop it, Tagwin. None of the rest of us likes this any better than you do.
How do you think I feel about leaving her? She's my sister. But if the forbidding comes down, it really won't make any difference what happens to Grianne, will it?
Beck, Rue admonished softly.
Tagwin went crimson with shame at the rebuke, his lips compressing into a tight line. He tried to say something in response, but failed. Trembling, he pushed past Beck and went on alone. It was Penn who went after him, hurrying to catch up as he wandered blindly ahead into the darkness.
Wait, Tagwin!
When he was even with the dwarf, Penn slowed and walked at his side. They were descending a stairway that was broad enough for two to pass together, so the boy was able to stay on his shoulder.
He didn't mean it, Tagwin. He just thinks like you do. He's afraid he will lose her.
Tagwin didn't say anything.
We all want to go back and help her, Penn continued. We are all afraid for her. I saw what sort of place the Forbidding is. I saw what she had to survive for all those weeks. She has been through a lot more than you think. I don't even know it all. She wouldn't talk about it with me. But I sensed it anyway.
All the more reason we should be back there helping her,
Tagwin said furiously.
She's not strong enough to face Shadea and those others. She'll try to stand up to them, to reclaim the order. But she might not have the strength to do it.
Penn nodded. I know. But if we're not there, Tagwin, she doesn't have to worry about us getting hurt. She only has to worry about herself. I think that's all she can manage just now. She sent us away to find the demon, but she sent us away to keep us safe, too.
He paused.
And if something bad does happen to her, we won't be there to see it happen. I think she wants that, too.
The dwarf looked over at him, but made no response. Kermadec had been waiting for the right moment, and when he heard the explosion from high in the North Tower, he knew it had arrived. He took his little band of rock trolls from the gatehouse in which they had been hiding and moved toward the main gate securing the north wall. They advanced at a trot, bunched close together for protection, prepared to fight their way through any resistance, but they were lucky. The gnome hunters guarding the keep were all on the walls or at the gates themselves, and the corridors between were empty. The trolls got to within 50 feet of the north gates before the gnome hunters standing guard at the huge crossbar securing the gates caught sight of them and shouted a warning to those on the walls. Kermadec responded by ordering his trolls to charge. They rushed the gnomes at the gates and fought their way through them. A hail of arrows and darts rained down from the walls, but once the trolls were past the defenders and up against the gates, the men on the walls couldn't see them anymore.
Adlan!
Kermadec shouted to his brother.
Take the others! Watch our backs!
With Barak to aid him, he turned to the crossbar. It was too heavy for even a dozen men to lift and had to be rolled in and out of a series of iron clasps by a pulley system. With attackers coming at Adlan and the remaining trolls from every direction, Kermadec and Barak heaved against the levers that engaged the pulleys and began to slide the crossbar free. Shouts turned to screams of rage and fear as the gnomes realized what was happening, and they flung themselves on the trolls heedlessly. Adelan's small line held for a moment and then broke apart under the rush. Dozens of gnome hunters converged on Kermadec and Barak. The latter fought to protect his Matarin, but was overwhelmed. Kermadec threw aside the gnomes who reached him, still leaning into the pulley levers. The crossbar grated slowly out of its metal fastenings, the pulley wheels squealing from the strain.
Adlan!
Kermadec shouted again as his attackers tore him away from the levers. His brother reached him instantly, hammering aside the gnomes who sought to bar his way, roaring the Taupo rough battle cry, which was instantly taken up by the trolls without. The gates sagged inward as Kermadec's soldiers outside pressed up against them. The crossbar was drawn halfway out by then, a single fastening securing it on its farthest end. Gnome hunters clinging to him, Atlan threw himself against the levers, and the crossbar slid all the way free.
An instant later, the gates heaved open behind the crush of armored giants pressing inward, and the trolls of Taupo Ruff poured through. The remaining defenders held their ground for a moment longer, then broke and ran, looking for somewhere farther inside the keep to regroup. Kermadec waited just long enough to be certain that entry into Paranor was secure, then broke free of the others and began to climb the stairs to the north tower. Although his brother didn't see him, Atalan was right behind. Chapter 29. When Shadea Aru reached the sleeping chamber door and pushed her way through the knot of gnome hunters that surrounded it, the first thing she recognized was that the door was magic sealed.
"She's free!"
she hissed at Trant Rowan and Pison Wentz as they came up next to her.
"Free? Of the Triagonel?"
The gnome looked stricken.
"That's impossible! No one can break out of a Triagonel!"
Trant Rowan smiled faintly, almost as if he had expected as much.
"Perhaps we failed to build it properly."
Shadea didn't know and didn't care. What mattered was that their worst enemy was no longer a captive in any sense. She would have to be dealt with in a more direct and immediate manner, or they were all finished. She motioned for the gnome hunters to move behind her, thinking to put some space between all of them and the closed door. "To my left," she told Pison, pulling Trant Rowan to her right. "When she comes through that door, burn her. Don't hesitate. Don't think about it. Just do it. We'll catch her from three sides. Even Grian Olmsford isn't impervious to druid magic." They backed away, Shadea all the way across the hall to the far wall, where she pressed her back up against the stone and summoned her magic to her fingertips. She glanced left and right to the other two, standing perhaps 20 feet away on either side in the middle of the hallway. The gnome hunters were crouched behind them, swords drawn, arrows notched into bows. 30, perhaps 40 strong, they waited. Then the door flew open, banging hard against the wall, and a specter emerged, a black and impenetrable wraith, backlit by light that poured through a ragged hole in the sleeping chamber wall. Its robes billowed out from its slender form, and light from the flameless hallway lamps reflected off the shiny surface of a clasp fashioned in the shape of the Eilt Druin, a hand holding forth a burning torch. For a second, in spite of their combined resolve, no one among those who obeyed Shadea Aru moved. The sight of the ghostly form froze even the sorceress herself. But then Shadea broke free of her momentary shock and sent druid fire streaking into the black cloaked form, burning it to ash. Fire from the other two druids followed on the heels of her own, disintegrating even the ash. Shouts of encouragement rose from the gnome hunters, who leaped up and down in response to the destruction. Then silence settled over the hallway, and everyone went still again. Shadea moved out to the center of the corridor, peering cautiously through the haze.
"I am not where you thought me to be," Grian Olmsford said from somewhere off to the right. All three rebel druids froze where they were, staring at nothing but wall and smoke and ash as they tried to find her.
"You are not my equal, Shadea," Grian continued quietly. "You never were. You never will be. You are banished from the Order and from these walls. All of you are. If you leave now, I will let you live. I have seen enough of killing and vengeance and do not wish to see more. You deserve much worse than banishment, but if you go now, that will be the end of it. You have my word."
A dozen responses went through Shadea Aru's mind,
all of them pointless. I don't think banishment will suit me, she said finally, and it remains to be seen if I am your equal or not. Show yourself and let's find out.
But Grianne Ormsford stayed invisible, speaking out of shadows and smoke.
Do you have any idea of what you have done? Do you have any idea at all? You sought to confine me to the forbidding. To do so, you enlisted the aid of demons, one demon in particular. You never stopped to consider why that demon would want to help you. You never thought that it might be using you as you were using it. What you did, Shadea, what all of you did, was to release a demon into this world by imprisoning me in the forbidding. That demon remains free. It has a purpose in coming here. It seeks to destroy the wall of the forbidding and set free all the demons it contains.
What nonsense, Shadea thought at once. Where is your proof of that, Grianne? She snapped angrily. Do you think us fools to believe such lies?
I think you fools not to. You have set free a changeling, Shadea. You have set free a creature that can disguise itself as anything or anyone. It will have already assumed the identity of another and begun seeking ways to destroy the Elcries. If we don't stop it, it will succeed.
We? You would enlist us, even as we are banished.
Shadea straightened to her full height. Come out of hiding and persuade us better, Grianne.
But even as she spoke, she was thinking of Iridia. Iridia, who had not seemed herself in that last encounter, and who had gone to send Dunsadan to be his advisor when Shadea would have bet anything against that happening. Iridia, who had subsequently disappeared completely. Could it be?
In an impulsive response to a possibility she could not bring herself to face, and disregarding her own safety, Shadea sent a scattering of illumination specks all across the facing of the wall fronting the bedchamber.